Good evening.
Good evening.
Last week we didn't quite finish the paragraph. At the end of it, it says, "There is nothing about me that you cannot attain." And I made it quite clear that it is not a matter of attaining something that you do not now have, or that you are not yet. Because you in your totality are always totally present. Whether you're ignoring part of yourself or not. And it's important to understand this so that you or your ego does not project a picture in front of you of a great distance to go, full of difficulty, before you can attain enlightenment. Enlightenment isn't knowledge that you will acquire. Enlightenment is you being in your right mind. It is you not being unconscious of any aspect of your infinite self. An infinite self that is present and is what you are experiencing through squinted eyes, and therefore through a partial perception of what you are at this very moment in your totality. I have nothing that does not come from God, and I would say you have nothing that does not come from God. Although you seem to have extra frills that you have added to yourself imaginatively through the use of imagination, the difference between us now is that I have nothing else. This leaves me in a state which is only potential in you. And I will say, it's potential and actual at the same time. It's only potential in you at the moment because you are conscientiously engaged in interposing definitions of everything which you prefer to what God is actually being there. Because you get an ego hit from being apparently and deludedly capable of having a private creation of your own. The hit you get from this very real seeming fantasy that you can create something is what is what addicts you to your attachment to illusion, rather than desiring to know what is real. What I want you to know is that the shift from potential to actual is a simple shift, facilitated by a curiosity to experience the reality of everything you're experiencing. And so you will find me harping on the simplicity of awakening, the simplicity of shifting from potential to actual. In a way, it's the simplicity of a miracle, which is a sudden shift of perception. Okay. Let us continue with the next paragraph.
No man cometh unto the Father but by me does not mean that I am in any way separate or different from you except in time, and time does not really exist. The statement is more meaningful in terms of a vertical rather than a horizontal axis,
which we discussed last week. Continue.
You stand below me, and I stand below God. In the process of rising up, I am higher, because without me, the distance between God and man would be too great for you to encompass. I bridge the distance as an elder brother to you on the one hand, and as a son of God on the other. My devotion to my brothers has placed me in charge of the sonship, which I render complete because I share it.
I'm going to stop you there. Which I render complete because I share it. Keep in mind that ultimately it is your job to also render it complete by sharing it. In other words, as you let in the clearer experience of reality, as you let the Father's love in because you desire to extend it, you, for lack of better words, complete the circuit. The key lies in the willingness to share it. You see? You will never be in charge of the sonship. But beginning to have a devotion to your brothers and sharing it is like bringing both poles of a battery into play where there is power, where there is a completed circuit. Continue.
Okay, I'm a little unclear, so for all of us people who are unclear, what's the it exactly that you're...
The it is my devotion to my brothers.
So I share my devotion?
Indeed, I extend it.
Not yours.
Pardon?
Not yours. Mine, though. Like, that's something that I think people get really confused. They share your devotion and not theirs.
Ah. Ultimately, your devotion to your brothers is expressed by your turning to the Father and asking, what is appropriate for me to be in this circumstance or this situation? Show me what to do. And the Father shows you what to do, and love finds expression in you that is extended to your brothers. Uncovering your brother's innocence and yours as well. But as I've said before, you have to have an object of your affection. And that is what your devotion to your brothers is. It's you having an object of your affection.
You're in charge of the sonship. Is that something like what's described in the Urantia book, and Michael in charge of the sonship?
You could say that, yes. I am in charge of the sonship in the sense that it is my function to facilitate the sonship coming back into full conscious awareness of its divinity, so that no part of the sonship seems to be separated off from another, not experiencing its unity and inseparability.
I'm appreciating how I'm beginning to experience you being there for us.
Then you are beginning to understand your real value to your brothers.
Example.
Exactly. You have an example so that you may, shall I say, reproduce the example. You do not have the example so that you can say, wow, I am significantly loved and blessed. And I know that my brother is significantly loved and blessed by Jesus as well. And then go along your way doing your things without having a conscious, committed, intimate relationship with your brother, where you extend it because you have a devotion to him or her, you see? This isn't about everyone realizing how wonderful I am, or how significantly blessed you are because I exist and haven't shirked the opportunity to be devoted to you. That's not what it's about. It's about you having that experience and realizing that indeed this is your function as well, to be devoted to your brothers and sisters, to begin to be involved in a brand new way. not at the level of manipulation for self-protection, but at a level of relating to your brother for the sole purpose of mentoring, being a blessing to your brother or sister. If you are love embodied, because that is what the Father is embodying as you, then your function is to be consciously experiencing being love. It's an interesting thing. When you let love, when you let the Father's love through you so that it illuminates the truth about your brother, the illumination that illuminates your brother casts back on you. And if you are not devoted to your brother and you are not extending love, the darkness that is there is the darkness that is where you are. Once you all get this, you will, with diligence and commitment and seriousness and reverence, address your brother consciously in a mentoring fashion. And you will catch yourself and squelch any old habits that attempt to surface that would have you stand in judgment of your brother. Because in doing that, you withdraw the light from him and from you. What I'm trying to convey here is that you cannot have the love of God register with you until you have extended it to your brother, and don't think you can. You can't have a private blessing. Privacy is the derivation of the human condition, which all of you profess to want to escape. And because you are escaping from privacy, it seems logical to you that you can wake up privately. That waking up is just a new but glorified way of being independent. And it's not true. Let's continue.
This may appear to contradict the statement, I and my Father are one. But there are two parts to the statement in recognition that the Father is greater.
Ah, yes, humbling words. I'm going to put it this way. If you will imagine that you're a puppet hanging from the strings that the Father is holding, you will know exactly where you stand in reality. But when you let yourself be the puppet of God, the expression of God, And you're not attempting to introduce any original movements as a puppet without strings, then you will find that your cooperation with the way the Father is moving you amounts to what is called co-creation. When you are yielding to what the Father is being right where you are, you are joined with the Father in His being of you, and His being of you, being of you, is always relative to every aspect of the infinity of creation, which means that you're yielding to His being all there is of you, will bring you into a full conscious awareness of creation infinitely, and your absolute inseparability from it, an experience of wholeness.
I can see where this could be a an area of a lot of confusion and even resentment, in that the confusion lies in authorship. For instance, here I am living my life, and I say that I'm following this feeling inside me that I need to go and do this or accomplish or whatever it is, a career or a relationship or whatever we do, and a confusion about the authorship of that, of saying, well, it's God moving me into it. And then the other area of resentment is I've heard this statement before, but when I first heard it, I'm a puppet on a string? I mean, the very thought is just, almost as if aliens took my body over, or I'm no longer in control, or you see what I mean?
Indeed.
And I am coalescing to these concepts, but nevertheless, when I hear them, I still feel that. That confusion of saying, how can I be sure where the authorship comes from? And the second thing, of course, is the whole concept of being controlled.
Indeed.
I just wanted to make that statement.
Yes. It is exactly the reason I use the illustration of the puppet. Because it cuts to the chase. It addresses the specific issue that every one of you needs to look at. Our Father, who art in heaven, you say. And if you go to church, you say it every Sunday. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it? The thought of it. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. You say that, but you never stop to really think about what it means. Thy will be done, not mine. Thy will. If that doesn't mean being a puppet, what does it mean? If yielding to the Father's will is your function, then what are you but a puppet of the Father? You don't mind using the words, well, I'm an expression of God. But an expression of God is God expressing Himself. It isn't something separate from God expressing itself. You see?
And you are a puppet too.
Absolutely. At this moment, I am yielding to the Father. Paul is yielding to me. Paul is yielding to the Father. He doesn't have the fullness of the experience of it yet. But the more he's willing to allow this to happen, the sooner there will be a spontaneous remembering of when he wasn't adding frills, when he wasn't trying to do independent movements as a puppet without strings. And as you can see, what causes him to do it is that he cares about you. He has an object of his affection. Today, he had a very, very strenuous emotional day. Almost overwhelming. But being willing to be devoted to you took higher priority tonight than hitting the sack or submerging himself in a movie on TV. So, he could have tried to engage in independent movements. He also could have found that upon his willingness to be devoted to you and turning to me, he could have found, and you could have found, that I might have said, there will be no meeting tonight because under the circumstances it doesn't fulfill purpose. You see, when you yield, you don't know what will happen, one way or the other. What you can count on happening here is that when he yields to me, when Paul yields to me, and I am yielding to the Father, everyone will be blessed. Because that's the nature of love. Does that answer your question?
In dealing with what you were just talking about, I've often used the construct that by yielding into the Father's will, what I'm doing is yielding into a larger me, which takes away some of the fear part of that whole issue of yielding into the Father's will, being the Father's puppet, essentially. And my question to you is,
but where did that image come from, or that concept come from?
It came from knowing that I'm much larger than I allow myself to see.
But where did that knowing come from?
Came from somewhere inside.
Before or after you got in touch with your guide?
It may have been before. I'm not, I can't place the time.
The knowing came after you consciously let in help, let in, allowed
for
joining.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yes. Because I was wrestling with the issue before then and didn't know what to do with it.
Before that, it would just have been an idea, not a knowing.
Right.
But you feel it. And the feeling comes when someone joins with you who is aware of his bigness, if I may put it that way. Continue.
And I guess my question is, am I avoiding, by using that construct, am I avoiding some little step here in terms of yielding fully to the Father? Because it's helpful, it's comforting to think of it in that way. Yeah, I'm not seeing how large I am, and so if I yield, then I become larger. And I recognize the comfort and the security of that, but I'm wondering if that isn't at the same time holding back and saying, okay, Father, here I am, totally naked, I accept, I'm your puppet, and let's go from there.
Well, the larger you is still a puppet.
Hmm. Bingo. Okay.
Do you see, the Father is greater and always will be greater. You are not your source and never will be. But when you are no longer claiming a sense of self separate from and independent from your source, then your source will be your constituting presence. God will be the presence and the only presence right where you are. And it is not possible for you to grasp experientially at this point the fact that you can still be you and Paul can still be Paul and you can experience each other distinctly while at the same time experiencing the fact that you are inseparably one. But that is what the fact will be. That is what the experience will be. Then you might say the two of you will do the dance God is dancing, and you will appear to cooperate with each other. You will appear to move intelligently with each other. You will be with each other in exquisitely beautiful ways, but not because you're expressing any independence from each other at all, or from God. I know the ego says, well, then you're just going to be some sort of automaton or robot. But you know what? As long as you buy into that, and as long as you have the intent of expressing an independent will, thereby proving, in quotes, that you have an independent existence, you will continue to experience the human condition, which, as I said earlier, you all profess you want to escape. I have done it, and I have not come back to you and said, I am miserable. And your guides have not said to you, they are miserable. And the way they relate to you, because it blesses you, demonstrates the fact that there is not misery in them, because if there were, it would be reflected and embodied in their guidance, and it would become your experience as well. Okay.
So no person that's awake is asking you any questions. No guide asks you any questions.
No. We all together know. K-N-O-W. We all together know that we know. And we rejoice, we joy in the knowing. We joy in the communion of our knowing.
So in the dance, no one ever misses a step.
That is correct. Let us continue.
Revelations are indirectly inspired by me because I am close to the Holy Spirit and alert to the revelation readiness of my brothers. I can thus bring down to them more than they can draw down to themselves. The Holy Spirit mediates higher to lower communication, keeping the direct channel from God to you open for revelation. Revelation is not reciprocal. It proceeds from God to you, but not from you to God.
And it never will. Revelation will never be reciprocal. It will always proceed from God to you, and it will never be from you to God. You see, that's where you goof up when it comes to prayer, because you say, here I am, an independent mind, and you stand over somewhere in infinity and you say, hey God, I'm over here. Hey God, may I have your attention, please? The communication doesn't actually work in that direction. Prayer, as I've said before, is you saying, Father, what is your will? It isn't saying, please give me this. Please make my marriage. Please save my marriage. Hey, God, I'm over here. Here's what I need. Here's what I want. You say, Father, what do I need? And then you shut up and listen and be receptive and stop resisting. How do you resist? By saying, oh, I should be able to figure this out for myself. Or I should be able to determine the manner in which God will answer me. Prayer is saying help, listening, being receptive, letting in so that revelation can occur and you can more clearly be the conscious presence of God being all there is right there where you are. When you are awake, revelation, God expressing himself, God expressing his will, God being all, will be your conscious experience of being you. Not of you being all, but of you being God, consciously being all there is. Your conscious experience of being will be God's conscious experience of being all. Revelation will not then seem to come to you. It will be your conscious experience of being, period.
So we stop for a moment to pray, Father, what is your will? And then we listen.
Indeed.
If we've gone through those steps, is it possible not to hear the response?
Yes, it is possible not to hear the response if there is still willfulness present. If you say, I want to hear God's will so that I can make a killing in the stock market, or so that I can really do my wife a special favor and gain her favor, or so that you can supposedly do something independently with the gift the Father has given you, you will not hear the answer.
It's just a lot of people seem to be asking and taking the time to listen, but even fewer have a conscious experience of hearing the response. On Sunday, Robbie asked if why she wasn't able to hear, or I can't hear, and your reply was, yes, you do, which she accepted readily. Oh, yeah, I guess I do.
Yes.
People ask me about that, and they say, well, I don't hear God's voice. And I don't understand how it's possible not to when you've put yourself in that position.
First of all, you don't know what God's voice sounds like. And that in itself causes you not to hear it because it's new. And so that's why it's important to persist in asking and listening. Because there is always a response. Your guides are available to you constantly. Your guides speak to you often. And you don't hear. First of all, because usually you're not listening. You're taking care of everything yourself. But once you learn that you have guidance available to you, then you begin to listen as though there is going to be a response. You've got to be willing to abide in the listening mode so that you can begin to make sense out of that space. So that the characteristics of silence, as opposed to your busyness of thinking, can begin to register with you as something other than just emptiness. The key is persistence. It's as simple as that. Understand that every time you ask, you are responded to. Understand that your guide has ways to find effective means for registering with you. understand that beginning to listen is the breaking of a long-standing habit of active independence. An independence which is geared for being sustained by not allowing anything to interfere with it. So don't be surprised if you don't hear quickly. And persist in the gentle desire to hear. When you ask a question, it helps to ask it softly. Don't yell it out into the universe. Don't say it with vehemence. Don't say it with determination. It's almost like homeopathy. The less there is of the substance, the more powerful it becomes. The gentler and quieter your question, the easier it will be to hear, because you are bringing less willfulness into the act of asking.
So then, even in the act of asking, we're yielding to God's will.
That is correct.
Thanks.
You are welcome. Let us continue.
The miracle minimizes the need for time. In the longitudinal or horizontal plane, the recognition of the equality of the members of the sonship appears to involve almost endless time.
Well, let's just think about it for a moment. If you're looking on a horizontal plane, and let's say in the horizontal plane, you could see the tops of the heads of all of the brotherhood. It would extend to infinity. And for you to manage to connect with each one of them would take an eternity to move to the other end of infinity, so to speak, and just say hi to each one. Continue.
However, the miracle entails a sudden shift from horizontal to vertical perception. This introduces an interval from which the giver and receiver both emerge further along in time than they would otherwise have been.
I will stop you there. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that if you are in a valley and you cannot see which way it's going to twist and turn, you seem to be at the mercy of time and space, because it will take time to move through the space of the valley to arrive at a point where you can see whether or not the distance you have traveled is actually helping you get to your destination. Whereas if you were to climb to the top of the mountain and had the larger view, you could from there see whether indeed that trail was going to get you to your destination, or whether the opposite direction would get you there quicker. And so by having the vertical viewpoint, it saves you time.
Is this principle represented by the axis mandali in Shambhalism? Is that what that's talking about?
Say that again.
In shamanism, the idea of the horizontal axis and the vertical axis intersecting each other, is that what that principle is talking about? The same thing we're talking about here?
You could say that, yes. However, this example of horizontal and vertical should not be relied upon in terms of physical definition. What it represents is what happens when you have a problem that needs resolving, or something that doesn't work well, and suddenly one day a light bulb goes on and aha occurs, and suddenly you see a solution to the problem. It is as though you were suddenly experiencing an overview. You were able to look at it from a point outside of the problem itself, or outside of the limitations you were experiencing when you were looking at the situation. The aha you have may take a while to express or explain to someone else. But the experience of the aha took place in an instant of time. Now, when you desire of God to know the truth about a brother or about a situation, and your reason for asking is because you have made that one an object of your affection and you care and you are expressing a devotion, and you want to be a mentor in this situation, you will find yourself, because of your quietly expressed desire, your gently expressed desire, you will find yourself infilled with a new perspective, a sudden shift of perception that will reveal your brother or sister to you in a new light, as I've said before. His or her divinity will be obvious to you, along with the realization of yours as well. There will be an intimacy, whether you've expressed the miracle, the sudden shift of perception or not. And the potential is there for your brother or sister to experience instantaneous and sudden transformation as well. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. And a situation will be harmonized, resolved instantly, which otherwise might have taken days or weeks or months of therapy or of reasoning one's way through the maze. You see? There are no private thoughts. There not only are no private thoughts, there are no private experiences. There is no private love.
I see something that, habitually I look for meaning and symbols and concepts, and now I see even more clearly that this is talking about my experience that I'm having. And I just clutter the experience and clutter the clarity by trying to relate it to some mystical symbol or some concept I got out of a book or et cetera,
absolutely.
Et cetera.
besides, in the sudden influx of shifted perception, you may find new symbols to use in talking or sharing with others that will be more effective than the old symbols were for triggering a new idea. Or you may, as I have done tonight, use an old symbol for a new reason, like all of you are puppets. And you're all familiar with Pinocchio and being a puppet without strings. So let symbols serve the revelation rather than trying to start with the symbol and have revelation work through it. Okay. Continue.
The miracle thus has the unique property of abolishing time to the extent that it renders the interval of time it spans unnecessary. There is no relationship between the time a miracle takes and the time it covers. The miracle substitutes for learning that might have taken thousands of years. It does so by the underlying recognition of perfect equality of giver and receiver on which the miracle rests. The miracle shortens time by collapsing it, thus eliminating certain intervals within it. It does this, however, within the larger temporal sequence.
Every single time you have the experience of the miracle, of a sudden shift of perception that causes you, by virtue of an unplanned clarity, to be in a place that you otherwise know it would have taken a great deal of time for you to get to through reasoning and working on yourself, etc. Every time you have that kind of experience, it tells you that you don't have to depend on time for anything. In other words, it helps weaken your reliance on time as the solution to your problems. And it relieves you of the idea that it must necessarily take you a long time to accomplish a lot. Because to whatever degree you have a commitment to it taking a long time because you believe it must take a long time, you are providing resistance to an instantaneous healing, to a sudden shift of perception, to the miracle. You see? So every time you have this experience of the miracle, it weakens your reliance on time, your faith in time, and your bondage to time. And this in itself helps precipitate the further breakdown of the idea that you exist in time and that time governs your progress. And this is wonderful. right, let us continue into section 3, Atonement and Miracles. Oh, that's okay. Someone has asked me to comment on, quote, the larger temporal sequence, unquote. You know what that simply means? That the miracle occurs within your present frame of reference. In other words, love meets the human need. It meets you right where you are. While you still believe you are not awake, while you still believe you are a body, it meets you right where you are, without frightening you to death by your having an experience of such radical transformation that it would be nonsensical to you. And so, you seem to have experiences of collapsed time within a still ongoing experience of time, but as I said, that in itself begins to weaken your faith in time, your commitment to it, and your bondage to it. And in that weakening of the apparent validity of time, you will arrive at a point where time will cease and everything will still make sense to you. So it does it within the larger temporal sequence because that's the only way your return to sanity can happen without increasing your insanity because great fear has been brought into play. And so it is a kindness. Continue.
I am in charge of the process of atonement, which I undertook to begin. When you offer a miracle to any of my brothers, you do it to yourself and me. The reason you come before me is that I do not need miracles for my own atonement, but I stand at the end in case you fail temporarily. My part in the atonement is the canceling out of all errors that you could not otherwise correct.
And it's simply that as an older brother, you might say, someone who has been down the road already, I can see the pitfalls that you cannot see, and because I care, and because I am devoted to you, I will point out the pitfalls that you can't see, before you fall into them, so that now you will be able to recognize them and point them out to another brother whom you have become devoted to and are willing to mentor.
Just for a point of clarity, when we speak of errors here, we're not talking like I put in the drainage system wrong, or I made a bad investment in the stock market. We're talking about the error of...
Errors of perception.
The error of not being miracle ready.
That is one of them, yes.
Is that what that... So in other words, if temporarily I'm not miracle ready, then you step in, and that's the kind of errors that we're talking about, correct? Okay, I'm just...
That is correct.
For some reason this evening, I'm unable to perceive my ego's interpretation of what you're saying, and yet see the other meaning as well. And so that's why I'm commenting, and also for reaffirmation as well.
Indeed, yes.
Well, you say you can help us because you walked the road before. But that was 2,000 years ago, and the world's a lot different since then.
Oh, it isn't the world. It isn't the world. It's the mind, and the mind is the same. The ego frame of reference is the same today as it was yesterday, as it was 2,000 years ago, and the way out of the ego frame of reference will always be the same. Today, the ego has high-tech means of screwing you out of your birthright that it didn't have 2,000 years ago. But it's still the same mental error. It's still the same mental aberration. Let us say that 100 years ago, you wanted to scam your brother, who you live in Europe, and your brother has moved to the States and has become wealthy, and you want to scam him for some of his money. Well, you must sit down and write a letter, and you must post it, and it must go on a ship to the Americas, and it must reach its destination. Perhaps 2 months later, you must wait for your brother to respond. It'll take another 2 months to come back. Today, you can accomplish the same scam in perhaps an hour over the internet. But the process of scamming is identical to what it was. The dynamic of scamming is identical today to what it was 100 years ago or 2,000 years ago. You see, the one thing that can't change is mind with a capital M. And therefore, in the human condition, the one thing that can't change is mind with a small m. And awakening is the undoing of the mind with a small m, the ego. You get the picture. Okay.
When you have been restored to the recognition of your original state, you naturally become part of the atonement yourself. As you share my unwillingness to accept error in yourself and others, you must join the great crusade to correct it. Listen to my voice, learn to undo error, and act to correct it. The power to work miracles belongs to you. I will provide the opportunities to do them, but you must be ready and willing.
And I'm going to interrupt here. Let us say a situation is occurring which requires correction. And there are two of you present who are asking God, what is appropriate here? In other words, the two are willing to listen to my voice, willing to learn to undo the error, and willing to act to correct it. And one of them finds that the action to correct it involves extensive one-on-one communication with a brother, taking hours of time. And the other, having listened and having been willing to learn what was appropriate and is willing to act, finds that it is not appropriate to be involved in that way. That can seem to be confusing if one is looking for consistency, that in other words, this kind of a situation calls for this kind of appropriate response. But the one who's being still may be holding a tone that makes it easier for the one engaged in the ongoing interaction to be successful. We're not talking about coming to an awareness of a correct action that will always be that action, or will even be that action for another one involved at the same time in the same circumstance. The only other thing I want to say at this point is that your devotion to your brother or sister, your willingness to have an object of your affection, doesn't just involve a willingness to let love through and to become imbued yourself with a clearer experience of your brother's divinity. It does involve what I called mentoring. It does mean involvement. It does mean being willing to act in terms of witnessing for your brother or witnessing for your sister. Witnessing on your brother's behalf may mean speaking up and disagreeing vehemently with actions he's engaged in that are governed by his own limited perception and misunderstanding of what the truth is. It may involve not arguing with him about what he's doing wrong, but instead talking about what is true, what is right, what will work, rather than focusing on what isn't working. But mentoring means being involved in a way that has a beneficial outcome. It is not about sitting there and bathing him or her in your beneficent love without involvement. I want all of you to let the word mentor and mentoring stay with you during this coming week. All of you would love to have a mentor. Why are you here tonight? Extend that to your brother. Be willing to look at your brother this coming week with a concept of yourself as a potential mentor rather than a harried housewife or a tired mother or a busy businesswoman who's got to stay aware of brass tacks and not mess around with any nonsense. Remember that every encounter you have can be a mentoring encounter. And then try and embody that to the best of your ability. And remember that mentoring does not mean enabling your brother to not be disturbed because you're behaving outside of his concept of what's right. That's not mentoring. Continue.
Doing them will bring conviction in the ability, because conviction comes
them,
through accomplishment.
Them being miracles.
Yes.
Continue.
The ability is the potential. The ability is the potential. The achievement is its expression.
I'm sorry, would you go back to doing them?
Doing them will bring conviction in the ability, because conviction comes through accomplishment. The ability is the potential, the achievement is its expression, and the atonement, which is the natural profession of the children of God, is the purpose.
I want you to look at the word profession as expression. What is atonement? It is the expression of forgiveness. And what that means is that atonement is the expression of love expressing the truth that is absent all judgment. Do not look at the word there, do not look at the word profession there as an activity. Oh, what profession are you in? Oh, I'm into atonement. You want to know what atonement is? It's what's embodied in the words praising God. And when you look at your brother or sister, acknowledging the truth of them that's been revealed to you, you're praising God. And there is no judgment present, no criticism, no ego ploys. You are glorifying God. That's what atonement is. That's what a mentor does, as I'm using the word tonight. A mentor glorifies God where someone else is seeing something less than God where he is. A mentor inspires new vision, new self-awareness. A mentor inspires the experience of innocence where it seemed that innocence had been lost forever. The ability to work miracles is the potential of one who is willing to approach his brother consciously from a mentoring place. The achievement of the miracle is its expression, and the atonement is the purpose. Because you know what? When you succeed in glorifying God where it seemed that God was absent, the one in that place where it seemed that God was absent cannot help but glorify God himself and extend the glorification of God further. And another domino falls. This is where we will end for tonight. This is all good news.
Mentoring is another way of what you were talking about, witnessing.
Deb, microphone, please.
So mentoring is what you were talking about when you were talking about witnessing.
Yes. Which brings a new element into the picture regarding witnessing. Because one could say that witnessing was simply the recounting of what is true, but mentoring involves in its definition the element of actual caring. One can witness to the truth like an expression of a laundry list, which can be quite impersonal and uninvolved, and not bring into play the conscious act of caring. And so that is one of the reasons I'm using the word mentor.
And the mentor is an ongoing or long-term relationship.
Humanly speaking, that is correct. And ultimately speaking, it's a forever way of being together.
It's brilliant use of symbolism.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But I am not bound by it, and 3 weeks from now I may well use something else even more triggering. Yes.
So you don't cling to the old rugged cross.
You are quite correct.
Raj, not too long ago I had an experience, two of them, just like you talked about, and that my day started out, I invited the Holy Spirit to be with me during my day, and I had two experiences just like you're talking about, and it was incredible, and my whole day was like that. But I started by inviting the Holy Spirit to be with me that day, and it was just like what you're talking about. People stopped in their tracks and for a moment were transformed, and I know that. And it was, I felt great doing it.
Indeed.
And they did. So I know what you're saying. I experienced that.
You end up spontaneously engaged in random acts of kindness, unpremeditated acts of kindness. What a wonderful thing.
It was
to be engaged in.
It was, and it was like we experienced something real. That's how I can describe
exactly.
It. It felt real. And it was wonderful, and it's a great, I wish I could be that every moment.
Well, just gently persist. Gently persist. Okay. I thank you for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.